shark. Just a drowning her reflection in the lake at Luna Park. I'm stuck on a hat check girl. When I'm trudging to the pit, she's got me singing sappy songs. When my shovel's getting heavy, she makes me feel strong. When I'm reading in my bed, she makes a short story long. I'm stuck on a hat check.
Good morning and welcome to episode 113 of Taking the Charge podcast with you from Regensburg, Germany. I'm David Hein of Hein News. Today we are going to talk about college basketball. The season tips off tomorrow, Thursday, November 14th, and figured that it's a good chance to address a lot of different things that are going on in the college basketball season. Brought in a can't say anything other than an expert, one of the old veterans of the NCAA battlefield, if you will, Dick Weiss, to talk about the college basketball season, which, like I said, tips off, I think, almost a good majority of the top 25 teams in the country are all in action. So it's going to be a pretty exciting season. I guess maybe why don't I just introduce the interview right away. We get into it that way, and then I can kind of address a couple things afterwards. So this is my interview, my chat with Dick Rice. Hope you enjoy it, and we'll catch you on the other side of that one. All right. So this week, with the start of college basketball coming right up, figured it'd be time to talk some college hoops. And decided to get Dick Weiss on the phone. He is a college basketball writers Hall of Famer. Writes for several publications outlets, New York Daily News. Works with Blue Star Media. Also is a regular with the Basketball Times. Dick, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. It was so nice to see you last year when at the World Championships. You get around. I love that.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be able to travel and catch the youth basketball and.
Well, plus the fact you're the ultimate go-to guy with the 19 with any of the youth development tournaments. So, well, I mean, you know every player on every team, which makes me feel like at least I know who to ask if I have a question. When I was in Dubai last year, it's like having someone with a life raft you can always go to when you're talking about any of these other European teams. It's fabulous. You're a fabulous resource. But, you know, I think we want to talk about college basketball, man. I actually know a little something about that.
How many seasons is this now for you going in?
I have covered 42. Now, I have covered 42 Final Fours.
Okay,
I think I have the most active Final Fours of any writer in the country.
Okay, so your first one would have been?
1970, UCLA beat Jacksonville, Sidney Wicks versus Artis Gilmore in a game that was played in Washington, D.C., and it was the first game that was played in the post-Luau Cinder area era, and the Bruins found a way to continue winning national championships that year. I mean, under the late John Wooden, they won 10. Yeah. This was one that was unexpected because Jacksonville had enormous size. Gilmore was 7'3". They had a 7-footer. They had an All-American guard in Rex Morgan. And a lot of people felt that either they or Bonaventure would be a team that could knock UCLA off. And I think Bonaventure might have, but Bob Lanier, who was an NBA All-Star and was a future Naismith Hall of Famer, broke his foot in the regional finals and never got a chance to play. So we never got a chance to see just how good they were. But they were probably as good as any team in the country. But we never saw that when we got to the Final Four. So UCLA won that year, and they continue to win. They won in 72. They won in 73, they lost 74, and then they won again in 75 during Wooden's last year. They are the last great dynasty in this country. Right now, college basketball, as we know it, Dave, is filled with great teams constantly having to reload because we have been hit with a flurry of one-and-dones to the NBA draft. And it's affected everybody, even Duke. Even Duke is now recruiting one and done. I mean, just last week, Mike Krzyzewski said that his big freshman center, Jahlil Okafor, who played so well in the 18s and 19s, would be definitely a one and done. He did not expect him to come back. And Okafor, who made the all-tournament team in the 19s, will probably be the first or second pick in the NBA draft. And kids right now, because the draft is based so much on upside potential, are hedging their bets. They want to get in the league as quickly as possible so they can get a second contract where they can make real money. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, college basketball is filled with it. The top four teams in college basketball, I mean, Kentucky is filled with one and dones and even two and dones right now. Duke has three kids who played internationally, Justice Winslow, Tyus Jones, and Jamal Okafor, two of whom could be one and dones. Arizona has Stanley Johnson, who was a huge success on the 18 and under America's tournament gold medal team. He is probably a one and done. And Rondé Hollis Jefferson, the sophomore, is probably a two and done. And then you have Wisconsin, which is very old school, coached by Bo Ryan, who's probably the best coach that's ever won a national championship. And they tend to keep their kids closer to 4 years than they've. But they have now become the exception rather than the rule. It'll be interesting to see how they do this year because they have two of the top 10 players in America, Frank Kaminsky and Kaminsky is going to be a senior. So it'll be interesting to see how they play. A lot of times in college basketball, experience can overcome talent for at least the first two or three rounds. Then it becomes a crapshoot, and the team that has the best players usually wins. It didn't quite happen last year. Connecticut, which had an upper-class team, particularly at the guard spots, ended up winning the national championship with Shabazz Napier and Ryan Boatwright. But, I would say that if Kentucky doesn't win this year, I'll be surprised. 9 McDonald's All-Americans, 5 players who could go in the high first round of the draft. I mean, they are definitely a team to beat, Dave.
And one of the things that Calipari there and Kentucky has kind of hinted at doing was 2 5-man rotations.
Is that something
you think that he'll be able to actually work through, or is it just
I think that he thinks it will work right now because they haven't really played Kansas, Louisville, or North Carolina. Right. Let's see whether his rotations strength when they get to the bigger games. Right now, he has 10 players he could put in the game. Their second unit, which would possibly win the SEC and would be a top 10 team themselves. This is the most talented Kentucky team since 96 when they produced 9 pros and Rick Pitino was still there. I mean, they are incredibly deep with talent. And I think one of the reasons John is posturing himself toward playing a platoon is because he has to keep everybody happy. These are basically young kids. He has five freshmen in the lineup, and only one, and one of them is Carl Towns, who could go in the first three in the draft. Yeah. And he needs to find a way to make the players and their parents happy, because he has sold these kids on the idea that he can turn them into pros fairly quickly. And I think that he will take, but I think it'd be by the end of the year. He hired an analytics guy, Dave, and I think he will use numbers to justify his position, because I'm not sure if he can win a national team with 10. It's a grand experiment. I think by the end of the year, I wouldn't be at all surprised if he settled into a traditional 8-man team.
Right, right. That, I mean, it seems like that's how it would end up. I mean,
you get too much.
You have things that work in games and sets that work together with people, and just having five guys
come in and out. I totally agree.
You know, even three guys coming in and out has such a big change on the game.
Well, I mean, let's face it, chemistry is still a big part of college basketball.
Sure.
And getting kids to play together is very important. I think that's what Wisconsin does very well. I think, but John is wed to all kinds of new innovations. I was down there at the end of September. They had a private workout for all of the NBA coaches and general managers, because frankly, where else are you going to go early in the season where you can actually see nine kids who can make an NBA roster?
Yeah, that's right.
So I went down there, and John and I have done a book together, so we have a pretty good relationship. So I spent the weekend with him just to see these kids play. And frankly, their talent level is as good as advertised. I mean, the Harrisons can be up and down, but Aaron was picked to be the player of the year in the SEC, and Andrew will be the other star at the guard spot, even though I happen to think that Tyler Ulis and Devin Booker probably bring better skills to the game. I mean, I think Booker's a better shooter than Andrew, and I think Ulis, even though he's 5'8", really is a lot quicker and can defend the pick and roll better and get the ball to key people much more effectively.
Let's just run down a couple of teams, and I don't want to talk about all of them. I mean,
sure.
You touched on what seems to be kind of the big four, Kentucky, Arizona, Wisconsin, Duke.
Right.
Kansas seems to be right up there in the top five. Obviously,
I think will be right up there. Kansas.
Yeah, they lost Wiggins. They lost Embiid. They bring in Alexander.
And Sheldon. They bring in Kelly Oubre. Yep, and they have Sheldon back along with Perry Ellis.
Yeah,
I mean it's a team that is filled with enough good players that I think a lot of people think Texas will win the Big 12 this year. I'm one of those people that say any road to the Big 12 championship has to go through Kansas. And I think that Bill Self is a very good player. He's doing something very interesting next year. You know, he's taking his entire Kansas team to the World University Games over in Korea. So he must be confident that he can constantly be competitive with the players he gets. And he is the one player, the one coach now that probably can bring in two impact players in any given season. I mean, the guy is very, very good at what he does. I think that they have a chance to make a late run in March. I think if there's one team outside the Big Four, that might be Kansas. I just think that the guy does a great job. I just felt bad for him last year. Embiid was hurt. Mm-hmm. And Wiggins, frankly, as talented as he may or may not be, wasn't ready to carry a team when they played Stanford in the third round of the tournament, and they ended up getting eliminated before they even got to the regionals in Memphis. So, but he's usually He'll surprise you. 2008, I don't think anybody thought that they would beat Memphis when Memphis had Derrick Rose, and they made that miracle 3 and won in overtime when the kid Chalmers was there. I mean, so he has had a consistent assembly line of players who have made him not only successful but made him dangerous in March.
They have another freshman coming in, Svetislav Mikuliak, the Ukrainian.
Kelly Obrey is an exceptional freshman. They also have the kid from the Ukraine.
From
the
Ukraine,
only 17.
Yeah, what? He played at the World Cup, and he actually did get some minutes. He was the MVP of the U18 European Championship Division B. Obviously, there's always the adaptation of getting to adjustment of getting used to the American culture. Is there any expectations on him at all to help? Is
I think
maybe
they'll
a
let
guy,
him grow into his game.
Something that more second half of the season.
Frank Mason and Wayne Sheldon, he'll get minutes. He'll be in the rotation. I think that they feel that they'll if he has to learn anything, he needs to learn the speed and the athleticism of the American game. As a pure shooter, I mean, for a young kid, I was at the Nike Hoop Summit. He just drains threes, and he drains a lot of them in practice situations. So his skill level is extremely high. But the American game's played a little bit different, which is why you have so many of these European juniors coming over to go to high school just so they can adjust to the speed of the game. It's a different game than it's played in Europe. Europe has a lot more continuity. I think the coaching is exceptional. I think the fundamentals are exceptional. But the American game is so based on athletic talent, Dave, and quickness, and it's almost a different game than you see internationally. And I'm not saying that's always good, but I am saying that it's an issue that everybody has to deal with.
You mentioned Wisconsin having two top 10 guys. Another team that has two top 10 guys is Wichita State with Van Fleet and
Rod Baker.
And Baker.
Yeah.
They obviously had the historic run last year. They're considered in the top 5. You know, there's always they've pretty much been
well,
able
there's
to
always
kind of
a question about teams that don't play in power five
mid-major, right? Yeah, what do you expect
from
the Shockers?
They're a mid-major, but they don't look like a mid-major. I mean, they were in the Final Four 2 years ago. They were unbeaten going into the third round game against Kentucky and St. Louis last year, and it was a very competitive game. I mean, it could have gone either way. I think Greg Marshall does a very good job of that team. He gets a lot of support from the community, a lot of support from the university. They want to be the team they were in the mid-60s, early 80s, and now again in the early 2000s. And they are, as long as you've got great card play, you always have a chance, and they've got two great cards.
Yeah. I guess the way I'd introduce it as maybe the freshman besides Okafor you're kind of most looking forward to seeing, and is that Miles Turner down at Texas?
No, Miles Turner's been a little bit of a disappointment offensively to me. He's more of a work in progress than Texas would like to believe. I would say Carl Towns.
Okay.
I mean, the three kids who were supposed to be the three best freshmen in college basketball were Okafor, Towns, who was almost perfect for Kentucky's system and just had an exhibition game in which he shot 10 for 11. And Emmanuel Mudiay. Well, we all know what happened to Mudiay.
Exactly.
I mean, Chinese professional league offered him 1.2 over 1 year, so he has left. But I would say that Stanley Johnson, and I'm really interested to see the kid Alexander, who played in the international 3-on-3s in Jakarta last year, play for Kansas, because I think he could be a game changer also. His team actually beat Okafor's high school team in the Chicago Public League Championships last year when he was at Curry. And he's a horse. I mean, nobody's getting in his way. He had the most dominant dunks for the American team in Jakarta. The problem they had was they didn't have any shooter to compliment them. And when they played Lithuania understood how to play 3-on-3 much better. Yeah. And they had better shooters, and they won the game.
Yeah. One of the keys, obviously, one of the what people may sort of, you know, think of keys to winning a title is also experience. There's a lot of experience and a lot of good experienced guard play over on the West Coast at Gonzaga with Pangos and Bell. Great coach.
Gonzaga is a team that nobody talks about, David. I think that they are a dark horse.
Well, they have the super motivated Wiltshire coming in, showing that he was worth being a Wildcat, Kentucky Wildcat recruit. Perkins is there. Obviously, Karnofsky is there. I think he's going to be better.
Karnofsky could be a top 15 player in the country.
I think.
And Pangos is back.
And then Sabonis is coming too. And I think Sabonis, will have less of a transition as usual freshman, international freshman. And he can do so many different things. And especially with the experienced guard play of Pangos and Bell. Thoughts about Gonzaga? You said, not really.
Well, they're the one team that has really embraced the recruiting of international players. Yeah. I mean, it would not surprise me if they end up with four starters on their team. They play in a smaller league, but, Gonzaga is a lot like Wichita State in the fact that, they built their own brand over and above that league the same way Connecticut built their own brand when they were playing in the American last year. I mean, but Gonzaga is a classic mid-major, but they've been good ever since they got to the Sweet 16 in 1999. I mean, they have had good teams. They run up huge regular season records, usually get... they were just a couple of years ago, they were ranked number one in the country headed into the tournament. They've had national players of the year like Brian Morrison. As long as the coach doesn't leave, I think that they have a legitimate shot at making a deep run. I think that's a point well taken, Dave. I love the fact that they and their kids. I mean, they stay 4 years for the most part, and their kids adjust to the American game probably as well as anybody, and they're capable of getting 85 in a game, and they have, and they're hard to guard because they can shoot the ball from so many spots on the floor. The great international teams, you can't get on the floor unless you shoot the ball effectively. They probably do as good a job as any team in the Pacific Northwest of doing that.
Defending champion is obviously UConn. Giffey's gone. Yes. Daniel's gone. Napier's gone. The main guy back is Boatwright.
They're going to be better than people think because of the players they're bringing in. They have Rodney Purvis, a 6'4".
Right, Purvis is coming over from NC State.
NC State. They recruited two very good freshmen. They recruited Sam Cassell's son, and they recruited Daniel Hamilton, who was a 6'7" wing player, who was a McDonald's All-American, and they have an African shot-blocking center in Amir Brahma, who spent a season in Miami and is just starting to surface as a huge defensive force. Connecticut has a history of players who have come in, like Okafor and DeBeat, who have played huge roles in whatever success story that they've been able to fashion. And this kid really will allow them to go for long stretches with playing four guards. I mean, now their guards are 6'7", 6'6". I mean, they have size. And they have Boatwright, who is probably going to be a top-10 player. He's a lockdown defender. He's a natural leader who is finally stepping out of the shadows of Shabazz Napier. And he was a double-figure scorer in all of the NCAA tournament games last year.
I guess the other team I'd like to ask about is Michigan State, just because they're, you know, obviously Izzo is such a great
coach. I love Michigan
coach.
State. They're America's team.
They lose Appling, who seemed like he was there for 30 years.
Izzo is a huge success ever since he has become the head coach. He was a regular in the Final Fours. I would say this year probably they will be picked second in the league behind the Big Ten, behind Wisconsin. They reached the Final Eight last year before they lost in Connecticut, which was essentially a home game for Connecticut in the Garden. And just remember, they have to replace Payne and Appling, and they really don't have a shooter since Izzo had to get rid of the kid Kaminsky. But they lost Gary Harris too. So they have a lot of replacement of players. The best player by far is Brandon Dawson, if he's healthy, and Denzel Valentine, who is a multiple position player who can play the guard or the forward for him and has some size. I think a lot will depend on how quickly they develop cohesive guard play. I don't know that I am totally sold on anyone being a guy who can play 40 minutes and have an impact at the point yet. I think those are things we have to find out. But Tom is a future Hall of Fame coach.
Tom Izzo.
and one of the nicest people you'll ever deal with in the game.
Hall of Fame coach, speaking of Big Ten, your expectations of Richard Pitino up in Minnesota.
You know what? He surprised me last year. I thought it would take longer for him to adjust in levels of play after he came up from Florida International. But he was very competitive, particularly at home. They won the NIT. He has enough players to be competitive in the league as long as Holland stays healthy. But I'm not sure that they can be any better than, I'm going to say, middle of the pack. If I were picking now, I'd probably pick them eighth or ninth because they don't have enough experience. But the guy's done a good job. He has started. I mean, last year he lost all three of his the big three in Minnesota. They all went elsewhere. I mean, one kid, Reed, went to Stanford, and Tyus Jones went to Duke. And they lost another player, Vaughn, to UNLV. But they are starting to get better players under him. He brings good enthusiasm. He's obviously learned a lot from coaching under Rick Pitino and Billy Donovan at both Louisville and Florida. And he actually opens the season this year
against his dad.
In a game against his dad in Puerto Rico this weekend.
Yeah. So usually it's strong guard driven teams or senior laden teams.
Right.
We talked about a lot of teams, and maybe just give me one or two that you think might be up there, who can maybe raise the trophy on April 6th in Indianapolis, maybe because of that guard or veteran team.
I like UConn a lot, only because people think they're really going to suffer a downward spiral this year. I'm not sure if there's anybody else other than the teams. Texas is the type of team that could be that has a shot to go deep in the tournament, provided Miles Turner can fill the role at center. He certainly has the size for it. I mean, they've got all kinds of bodies back. I mean, the Jonathan Holmes and Cameron Ridley, and they have a really strong backcourt, and Javon Phoenix and Isaiah Taylor. And they're the type of team that has come a long way in a short time. Just remember, last year at the start of the season, or a lot of people didn't know Rick Barnes was going to be back this year.
Right.
Now he's America's darling again, and he finally has enough players to play toe-to-toe with Kansas.
You mentioned Emmanuel Mudiay going over to China. He's had a pretty strong start over there.
I saw him with a triple-double the other night.
Yeah. If he does well, he comes back in this, say, like, as most people expect, probably a top three, top five pick.
Right.
And you know, there's talk about maybe the NBA going to 20 as an age limit. In general, do you think that, especially if he does have success and comes back and gets the high draft pick, that this is something that that high school kids will do?
I think if they ever go to 2 years, you're going to see more American high school kids wanting to get paid immediately.
Yeah.
And the number that China has thrown out.
Because
let's face it, some of these people are, I mean, you go to the NCAA to brand yourself. If you're already at top, if a Moutier goes in the top three, people are going to start thinking, you know what, if I can get paid $1 million to play in China and I come back, I'm still a number three pick, why shouldn't I try it?
Yeah.
It hasn't always worked. Didn't work with Jennings. Didn't work with Jeremy Tyler. I think that more and more kids will look at this as an option. There was a big center from Memphis this year, Shell Labossiere, who was a 6'10 center from Haiti, who goes to school in Memphis. And it would not surprise me if he skipped college next year to go and play in Europe during his freshman year. But I think he could sink down into the high school level or into the where they start recruiting these kids right out of high school and saying, why do you have to go to college if we can pay you? You're probably going to get the same game experience because there's so many ex-NBA players trying to get one last contract over there. So
well, that's especially a guy like Mudiay.
Marbury.
Marbury, there's Jeter, there's Crawford. There's a lot of NBA experience over there, especially for a point guard, a young point guard. He's not going to get that at the NCAA level. Plus, he's playing 48 minutes.
I mean,
he's playing a number of games per week. So, I mean, there's a lot to actually – you know, that is actually speaks in favor of this, no?
I totally agree with you, by the way. I totally agree with you, and I'll be interested to see what happens. The NCAA has a very strong branding, and they can make it very attractive if you're on television 30 times a year like you are at Kentucky, but everybody's not going to go to Kentucky. Everybody doesn't want to go to Kentucky,
exactly.
And now these kids all have another option.
Yeah. I don't know if you caught it. Syracuse playing Carleton, one of the better colleges up
in Canada.
Where I'm going with it is we were starting to talk about it before, and I said let's wait because I want to talk about it on air. Thon Maker, obviously, who's right up there, probably top five in his class. 97, 17-year-old. He's gone up to a Toronto area high school,
right?
Academy.
Yeah.
First of all, I guess, and he's going up there with his brother as well. Thoughts about him? I guess you've seen him. Thoughts about him?
I think he's the next Kevin Durant.
And what do you think about him going up to Canada and maybe about Canadian basketball? I don't know if you did see that Carleton game, but just, you know,
yes,
with all the Canadians
being drafted. Canadian basketball is really at the grassroots level is really growing. CIA Bounce has always been highly successful, not in, just in Nike, BYL, but also in Vegas. At the end of the year, they are producing a lot of Division I players on a regular basis.
Why do you think that is?
I think that they get very good coaching at the AAU level, and I think Toronto is becoming a hotbed for basketball. But, you know, it would help if these kids would all play for their country in the Olympic qualifiers. I mean, last year, it wasn't like Bennett or Wendt or, I mean, it was like Bennett, the kid from Kansas, actually,
Wiggins,
decided to play. They just stayed put. And they were both the number one pick in the draft, but I still felt that Canada doesn't always send the best teams. And the team that they sent to South America last year at the World Cup qualifiers was a disaster. I mean, that was a weak qualifier because an awful lot of countries didn't send their best players, and Canada laid an egg. Now they have to go through an entire qualifier to get the Olympics. The one plus that they have, if they were to send all of their players, is the Americans have already clinched an Olympic berth, so it opens up another spot in the Americas. And the tournament is going to be in Mexico this summer. But, you know, nothing's a given. I mean, you know, Brazil, Argentina, Dominican, and Puerto Rico and Mexico all have decent teams.
Yeah. Venezuela.
So nothing's a given for them.
Yeah. How much do you know about
them? But they're high school, the level of high school play, because they send so many players to American prep schools.
Yeah, but how to play at the highest level? How about if they
prep?
What's the level of their college? I'm going to talk and try to talk to them soon.
It is most players go to American schools. Carleton is probably the exception. They can be very competitive in exhibition games. And have been very competitive in exhibition games, but most of the best Canadian players are enrolling in American colleges.
I guess that's really about it. It's almost a shame that I don't ask you a bunch of your favorite games and stuff like that.
Okay.
Just because I don't want to go too long in the interview, just because I want people to really go through.
Fine.
But maybe one or two of the when we had Jim O'Connell on last year.
Yeah, my favorite game will always be Villanova Georgetown '85. Because Villanova had to play the perfect game to beat Patrick Ewing. They shot 78% for the game and 90% in the second half. Nobody does that. The 80s really made the NBA, the NCAA tournament. There were a lot of very, very close games. I mean, Michael Jordan over Georgetown when he was a freshman in North Carolina making the last shot. The Christian Leitner game when Kentucky lost to Duke in Philadelphia in the regional finals, when he didn't miss a shot the entire game and made the shot he had to make at the end after a length of the floor pass to the opposite circle from Grant Hill and got nothing but net against two guys who were trying to guard him. That game really rang a bell. I think I really liked the Kansas-Memphis game in 2008 when Chris Chalmers made a 3-4 overtime and then Kansas went on to upset a heavily favored Memphis team. And I liked the Kemba Walker run in 2011 when Connecticut, who was only 9-9 in the Big East, ended up going on the ultimate roll, winning 5 games in the Big East tournament, and then winning 6 more to win the national championship in Houston.
Top 1 or 2, 3 guys that you enjoyed watching?
Walton. I saw Walton shoot 21-for-22 and score 44 points in the 73 final against the Memphis in St. Louis. I think Patrick Ewing was the most offensively dominant player. I never saw Russell play, obviously. But for my money, Patrick Ewing was the most offensively dominant player. And they won the national championship in '84, and in the semifinals, they held Kentucky, who was a pretty good shooting team, to 3-for-33 in the second half, and he had a lot to do with that. Other guys that really ring a bell for me, I think Leitner made more big shots than any player in the modern era. He had 2 game winners in regional finals. He was as good as I've seen in clutch situations. And, you know, even though I didn't see Bradley get 58 in 1965, I did, as a young kid, I did go to the Palestra and watch him play for Princeton. And he was the most fundamentally sound player I ever saw.
Yeah. Let's come back to this year. One guy that maybe people aren't not necessarily sleeping on, but just might not know that much about, who you expect real big things from.
Oh, that's hard to say. I think it would probably have to be a guy that had a chance to be in the first round of the tournament that doesn't play in a major program. Maybe Alan Williams from UC Santa Barbara or R.C. Hunter from Georgia Southern would be names that people have never heard of before that are both going to be first round draft choice. One is a one is a forward, the other is a guard. I think Bobby Portis would sideboard Arkansas in the top 20 all by himself. I think everybody talks about the players coming back at Kentucky. I think Devin Booker probably is as good a pure shooter as there is in the country. And I think people are sleeping on Justice Winslow, the freshman from Duke, only because they haven't seen him play.
I love
him. And we got a chance to see him play in Prague, Dave.
I've seen him twice. I've seen him two summers, man. I love him.
He's a solid player. But, you know, everybody was so caught up with the Okafor signing. I think that maybe they took a miss. He is starting for them right now. As a freshman, I think he will be their second leading scorer before the season's over.
Oh, he's a beast. I love him so much. I just hope that he continues to develop as he did. So
so do I. So do I.
Who do you have? Who do you think wins it?
I think Kentucky wins it this year. I think that they have overwhelming talent. And I think that this is the first Kentucky team I can actually say has more than five guys who can make a shot. All of the freshmen can shoot the ball. That never happens. And so when they get in critical situations, as long as these kids aren't overwhelmed by the moment, I could see Ulis or Booker or Trey Lyles or Carl Towns all making game-winning shots if they had to.
All right. Tell people where they can read your stuff, where they can follow you.
I do TV work for the Big Ten Conference. I do work for Basketball Times. I've done the big events for the New York Daily News. I have done work for George Raveling website. I've done work for Blue Star Media. I've done work for Basketball Times, and I've done some work for the American Conference. So, and I've just written two books. I wrote one that's coming out in a couple of weeks with Dick Vitale, and another one that I did with Teresa Grantz, who was the 1992 U.S. Olympic coach and probably the best player of her generation in the early 70s for Immaculata. So I've been busy. And I'm working on a couple more books now, so it never ends.
Twitter feed, you're on Twitter a lot.
My favorite part of the year. What's that?
Go ahead, keep going, sorry. Your favorite part?
No, I said my favorite part of the year is rapidly becoming, going and learning about the international game. I'll be in Crete this summer for the 1900s. I'll be at the Pan Am Games. And who knows, I may be at the European qualifiers. I'd like to go to the EuroLeague Championship Final Four this year in France. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, plus there's always the NIJT too.
It's a whole new world for those of us who don't experience it over here, and you learn an appreciation of the game that you just don't have if you grow up in this country. We mass produce great athletes who play basketball. Over there, the practice time is so intense. They mass produce good athletes who can be high level, fundamentally sound basketball players. And I think the coaching over there is exceptional.
Twitter, you want to give them your feed as well?
Yeah, it's at Hoops Weiss. So very easy. WEISS.
Yep. He also
doing a nice job promoting me. Thank you, sir.
Well, come on, you got it. Got it. He tweets a lot about college football. Question here: do you think if Utah scores that second touchdown, goes up 14-0, that they actually have a chance to beat Oregon?
Yes, that was a brutal way to lose a game because it changed momentum completely. They were on their way toward scoring another touchdown. They fumbled the ball.
Well, they scored the touchdown.
Oregon picks it up and returns it 100 yards for a touchdown. It changed the entire game because if they're up 14-0, now all of a sudden Oregon is faced with an uphill climb, which they usually, in games they've won this year, they've usually got out to a quick start. And that game really kind of hinged on that one play, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you go down 14-0 to even 7-7.
Huge swing.
Yeah,
huge swing.
All right, fantastic stuff, Dick Weiss.
Hey, my pleasure, David.
Appreciate it. Yeah, go follow him on Twitter. Go read him pretty much anywhere. Go get his books. Just a great guy to get great information from. So thanks a lot. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Oh, Dave, it's so nice talking to you. Okay, hope you have a good season.
Thanks, man. You too. So Kentucky, man, they look really, really, really strong. It's amazing. You know, you bring the guys back. You bring the Harrison twins back. Poulterus is there still. Willis is there. Lee's there. And then you bring in guys like Booker and Lyles and Towns, who are all beasts in their own way, and even Ullis. And man, that just looks like a really, really amazing team. And I think rightfully so. Up on top of the preseason rankings and the prohibitive favorite. Sure, they'll be tested. They'll be tested in the SEC and they'll play their tough games. You know, they play Kansas early on, so they'll see what they have there. They do play Texas. You know, they play UCLA. Of course, they play against Louisville. They'll have plenty of tests. They might lose a game. You know, lose a game or two. It won't be many, and it won't be by very many points. But I do think that they are pretty much the cream of the crop. That Duke trio is pretty special. A lot of people in the youth basketball world know that trio of Okafor, Winslow, and Jones just from Team USA competitions over the last 3 years. So they'll be fun to watch also with the veteran Quinn Cook. The one guy I did want to address is out in Oregon, a freshman that I wanted to address. Who I'll be watching is Dylan Brooks, who was one of the stars of the U18 FIBA Americas Championship for Team Canada. So he's out in Oregon. They might not be as strong of a team as some of the other teams that we talked about. But that is one guy that I'll be watching. Like we mentioned. Mikhailiuk, the Ukrainian. It seems to me that he's going to need some time to get used to the pace, like we talked about, and then he might be a second half contributor. Maybe he might be able to do some things. Kansas, they know he's going to be there for 2 years. He can't go. He can't be even commit to go to the NBA for another year. He's just so young. They have time to bring him in. So Duke will be interesting to watch. Wisconsin, Wisconsin will be battle tested with that Big Ten, we didn't talk much about North Carolina with Marcus Page, but he's another great guy. Virginia also in the ACC. There's obviously Florida and Louisville with their great coaching. So, you know, there's, I think there's plenty of candidates out there, but it seems to me like, you know, just like Dick agreed that the Wildcats are really good. Kentucky Wildcats are really just going to be the absolute powers. You know, it's going to be, you know, the nice thing is having Dick Pearl back on the sidelines. He's at Auburn. He, you know, breathed some new life into Tennessee, which was pretty exciting. Had a great, you know, there was all those great shots of him going to women's basketball games, which is obviously huge at Tennessee, with chest painted, his whole entire body, upper body painted orange, the color of the Volunteers there at Tennessee. Ran into some problems, but it's nice to see him. You know, he's had some success along the road, so it will be interesting to see what he's able to do in the SEC. Obviously, another tough team in that at Auburn in the SEC, tough conference there. Kentucky, Florida, the Missouris, Tennessees, Vanderbilts, Alabama, Arkansas. You know, there's obviously so much talent in that conference. So he's another guy. You know, we mentioned Gonzaga and just, I think that, you know, going, you know, 13th and you know, top 15 program in most rankings. So it's going to be real, real cool to see them. I think Karnofsky's really going to take another step this year. You know, should be a good college basketball season. You know, there's going to be a fair share of one and dones. So you're going to have to enjoy seeing some of these kids play college basketball because they're not going to be around very long. There's always a senior laden mid major who sort of shocks people, if you will, sort of like Wichita State, sort of like a VCU. So it'd be kind of interesting to see what happens. You know, Southern Methodist, SMU, you know, they have the legendary coach Larry Brown there, but with Emmanuel Mudiay going to play basketball in China, you know, that's a huge hit to that team. I mean, that was a top four program, you know, for, you know, before he left. And once he bolted, you know, obviously the chances of them, you know, took a huge hit as well. So, but, you know, there's, you know, college basketball is not just one player. So, and Brown is such a great coach. And so it'd be interesting to see what he might be able to do. But I just think that Mudiay is not being there is going to be a huge hit that I don't think they're really able to come back from. But still, you know, a lot of great teams, and over the course of the year, we'll be also looking at the be looking at the internationals and stuff, and try to take a look at see who are some of the guys who are really stepping up internationally wise as well, kind of let you guys know on that as well. Try to get a couple interviews here and there, see what we could do. I don't want to go into too many different things. You know, I think what I'm going to try to do with the show is just kind of pick one topic, focus on it, and then kind of play with that, and then just let it go with that. EuroLeague, you know, just, you know, you had the big upset of Cedevita beating Maccabi at home in Israel. That adds some dynamics to a group that, Malaga, you know, they love them losing to Moscow was kind of expected, but, you know, now it's Cedevita there, you know, it makes that whole group interesting. Bayern getting it more injured. And so that's going to be a tougher road for them. I'll come back to EuroLeague, you know, every now and again, but you know, the format of the show, I think we're just gonna kind of just look at just one topic and kind of focus on that, and I wanted to do college basketball since it's starting this week. So enjoy the action. You can see all that. You can see the games. ESPN's got this game player, which is pretty cool. It has all the games on demand. And you see right away, top 7, 8, 9, 10, the top 18 teams are in action on Thursday. So if you want to see who's who, and then even the 18, let's see, 19, so 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 23, the top 25 teams are in action on Thursday. So you want to get a taste of who's who, who could do what. You see it right away. They might not be, that great of matchups, early in the season. It's kind of, you never see much of that. But you'll be able to see the teams at least. So go get the ESPN package. It's a pretty cool player there. They show, like I said, you could see it all. Enjoy the hoops. We will catch you next week, and I guess before I go, I will let you know what you're listening to. The song is called "Stuck on a Hat Check Girl," and it's by L Duval. And I hope you enjoy that. As you know, I love some of that jazz, and so there's a bit of that. So talk to you next week.
My house on fire for to guide me through the dark and cross a poison river in the belly of a shark just to drown in her reflection in the lake at Luna Park. I'm stuck on a hat check. She's got me singing sappy songs. When my shovel's getting heavy, she makes me feel strong. When I'm reading in my bed, she makes a short story long. I'm stuck on a hat check. Says she's too young to marry, so just get it through my head. But she'll gladly be my widow, and to call her when I'm dead. So I'll take my shredded heart to make a ribbon for her hair. And I'll ask the undertaker for something nice to wear. Look up my obituary and you'll find her picture there. I'm stuck on a hat check girl.
My name is Dario Šarić, you listen and take it to charge.